Climate change is supercharging global weather events, but some people are still denying it exists.
It's beyond ridiculous. It's got to stop.
And in many cases, the people who don't believe in climate change are the ones who get hurt the most.
So these are areas where communities have high levels of skepticism about climate change, and by extension, maybe aren't as prepared for these extreme events.
Today is Thursday, October 10th, and this is The Issue from VOA.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
It actually came down our road, and it took out about six or seven big farms, nurseries, flower farms, tree farms. It leveled barns to the ground. Greenhouses were completely twisted and thrown up in the air, gone.
Back-to-back monster hurricanes in the United States.
A person being rescued in Belgium after the worst flooding to hit Central Europe in at least 20 years. The aftermath of Hurricane Kirk.
Earlier this week, Bosnia and Herzegovina got as much rain in 6 hours as they usually get in 3 to 4 months. This woman said everything that her father built during his life simply disappeared in about 30 minutes.
We are seeing unprecedented levels of flooding and drought and wildfires across the globe. Scientists have for years been warning of the increasing risk communities face due to climate change. Ben Clark, a climate researcher at Imperial College London, says weather events like the back-to-back hurricanes in the United States are a sign of what's to come.
The closeness of these two storms really symbolizes something that could happen in the future and the danger of climate change, which is that you could have multiple events that have been made each more destructive by climate change affecting the same area in quick succession, which is when the impacts start to become kind of really catastrophic.
And despite what we're witnessing in real time, not everyone believes climate change is responsible for the intensifying storms. President Joe Biden expressed his frustration while giving an update on the hurricane response.
Now the claims are getting even more bizarre. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, a congresswoman from Georgia, is now saying the federal government is literally controlling the weather. We're controlling the weather. It's beyond ridiculous. It's got to stop.
You know, Lori, it's getting kind of kooky. I don't think there's any other way to say it. What she's saying is the government has a machine that alters the weather.
Well, if that's the case, then I guess that same machine can fix climate change. I never thought of it that way. This is silly season right ahead of, you know, less than a month now before the election. But I don't think we've ever seen anything like this with the just crazy talk.
I suppose we shouldn't laugh because it's so serious. But this disinformation, this misinformation has been amplified globally by social media. And, you know, there are people actually studying the rate and impact of climate denial. One of those people is Joshua Newell. He's co-director of the Center for Sustainable Systems at the University of Michigan School for Environment and Sustainability. He joins us now to talk about this.
We are witnessing more and more catastrophic storms. And of course, in the last 2 weeks, two very, very serious hurricanes in the U.S. And of course, around the world, we're seeing all kinds of really serious catastrophic weather events. We've all heard for years now from the world's leading scientists that human-caused climate change is making all of these weather events so much more serious. My understanding is it's settled science around the globe. Fossil fuels are creating greenhouse gases, warming the planet. Your study focuses on climate denial. Tell us a bit about the study and why and how you went about it.
Sure. So we were interested in studying climate change across the United States at scale. So we were especially intrigued by what was then Twitter data. And we sought out to use artificial intelligence, specifically deep learning techniques, to capture sentiment about climate change across the U.S. and at the county level, so at a very granular level. The nice thing about social media data is that you can do these kind of assessments quickly, relatively quickly, and without a lot of surveys, questionnaires, and detailed studies in the various geographies of the United States. So we were able to basically estimate climate change denial that was correspond very closely with the most well-known annual study, which is by Yale on climate change opinion. So basically, we use Twitter data and we use artificial intelligence to extract people's sentiment about climate change, and we map this across the U.S.
What were some of the highlights of what you found?
Well, we found approximately 15% of the U.S. population still denies the existence of climate change. But this is very varied by geography. So you have parts of the U.S., like parts of coastal California, where climate change belief is very high. And you have parts of the U.S. where, such as in Appalachia, for example, and parts of Texas where climate change denial is very high. And so what's interesting, I think, and unfortunate, is that some of the hardest hit areas from the recent Hurricane Helene, such as in Appalachia and western North Carolina, some of the, at least according to our study, some of the highest rates of climate change denial are in these counties. So these are areas where communities have high levels of skepticism about climate change, and by extension, maybe aren't as prepared for these extreme events, hurricanes that have been exacerbated by and made more severe by climate change.
So what are some of the most influential roles played here, playing out here in determining how a person, whether a person believes in climate change or not, and if it's real?
Well, our study also looked at the influence of social media and what actors are spreading misinformation about climate change and using social media to promulgate that misinformation. And our network analysis reveals that, you know, Donald Trump is the highest, the most influential person, at least he was during when the study was taken, during the period when we extracted the Twitter data, and was very influential in spreading disbelief about climate change, and a cohort of influencers, particularly among conservative blogs and media, were also influential in spreading this information about climate change. So it really, I think, speaks to the divided state of our country, where we have echo chambers on social media, where you have a smaller cohort of people that are expressing doubt about climate change and misinformation about climate change, and a larger contingent on the other side in social media that believes in climate change. And based on our network analysis, it seems that these two communities are not talking to each other and communicating with each other. Sort of divided worlds in the social media landscape.
Is that how you make the leap, do you think, from being able not to see what's actually happening around you, is that you live in what we now commonly refer to as your bubble?
I think that's part of it. I think that's part of it for sure. You get your information from selected sources. You distrust the other side's information. And we have this unfortunate reality where we have two parallel universes going on.
Has there always been sort of a part of the population in general that is skeptical of science in general? Because I understand your research also saw a connection between climate denialism and low COVID-19 vaccination rates.
Right. You have a very strong correlation between distrust in science and climate change denialism, and distrust in COVID vaccination rates are a proxy for distrust of science generally. So yes, I think there's a long pervading skepticism of science, that unfortunately is magnified in echo chambers, and it's hard to combat that information and that misinformation.
Did you just concentrate on U.S. data, or do you see this same kind of, is this data replicated globally?
It's not, as far as I know. I know there are studies in various countries on climate change opinion, but we focused only on the United States. But the fact that 85% of the U.S. population believes in climate change and believes that humans are the primary cause of climate change is actually pretty strong and pretty high. So you can focus on the denial, the those that deny climate change, the smaller portion of the population, but we have pretty good consensus in this country, you know, if you look at it as a glass half full issue.
But doesn't the 15% influence disproportionately any political action to address the issue?
It does, unfortunately. It does. And that's why we're so interested in looking at the geographical spread of and distribution of climate change skepticism across the U.S. to see where it locates. And indeed, it does locate in many red states who have obviously two senators and a number of congresspeople representing them that have effectively stymied climate change action. I should note, though, I find it surprising, this is an aside, that the president, the Democratic president candidate for president, Vice President Kamala Harris, has not made climate change, at least in some, the popular press I've been reading, has not made it a strong issue. And even with the hurricane, the recent hurricanes, I haven't noticed that expressed as much as I thought it would and should.
It's interesting, too, this week, the president of the United States had to come out and confront a lot of misinformation.
Yes.
And also that included a congresswoman who said these storms are created by the government. I mean, those are, you know, there's a lot of misinformation. You know, we're talking about the political aspects of it. How do we address this very serious concern that will impact everyone really on Earth? What are your concerns for the future going forward?
Well, I based on my conversations and with my climate science colleagues at the University of Michigan and reading about the issue, climate change, the impacts of climate change are only going to get more dramatic and more severe. That's the unfortunate reality we're facing. In terms of strategies and actions, I think the Inflation Reduction Act is monumental in its scope and its ambition to decarbonize society. Those are very positive steps. I think that other parts of the world are moving towards strategies to address and mitigate and adapt to climate change. We have to scale up efforts everywhere, including in the United States. I'm hopeful that society, the public, will act. But I'm deeply concerned by the level of misinformation that's flying around about climate change, about the government's response to it, about who is causing it. And it's very difficult to combat in such a divided social media landscape.
Do you think social media companies need to do a better job of policing themselves?
Well, one of the recommendations we made in the paper, on the climate change skepticism paper, was that indeed social media companies should flag misinformation about climate change, just as they flag misinformation about COVID vaccines, and they have flagged misinformation and, you know, destructive posts about the January 6th uprising. So social media companies do flag tweets. They have flagged posts that are not true. And I think we should be considering as a society the best way to move forward when we're dealing with such an existential threat like climate change, how we are going to monitor and regulate information that's posted on social media, and what is the role and where is the boundary between free speech and speech that's harmful to society, harmful to individuals, and can incite violence.
Joshua Newell, co-director of the Center for Sustainable Systems at the University of Michigan School for Environment and Sustainability.
It's really, Scott, this is just another indication of how life has changed so much since
the advent of social media,
showed up in our lives. And, you know, in some ways it's been great, and in other ways it's created all kinds of issues that we never thought we would have, and has such a massive platform that this is, it's something that's hard to contain. We'll be talking about it for a long time.
I kind of like the way Josh turned it around and said, you know, the upside is that 85% of the people believe it.
That's definitely a positive, or at least in the United States. We'll have to check more on globally where we stand in that, as far as what the rest of the world is thinking. You've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks so much for spending the time with us.
Follow The Issue on X and Facebook at VOA The Issue, and for news 24/7 on our website at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London. See you tomorrow.